90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Good morning, and today we will be discussing the Kansas City School Board election on April the 2nd. Our guest for the second half of our hour will be Matthew Oates, candidate for the Sub-District 1. The Kansas City School Board will have their general election on the April ballot. School board elections are different than city council elections, as they are not don't have the primary and general elections. The individuals with the highest votes will be seated at the next board meeting. The election will also be a change for Kansas City school boards. The board will go from 9 board members to 7. The board will be composed of 2 at-large members in 5 sub-districts. This will be the first time the board will have 7 members since 1969, when it was expanded to 9.
Good morning. Our speaker just now is Larry J, who is the host of the next radio show. My name is Gwen Irvin, and I've been asked to be kind of ad hoc on this half hour. We're discussing the Kansas City Public Schools School Board, and Larry J is going to lead us off.
Okay. let you know, Kansas City, if I stumble around through this and everything, we're going to make it good for you, okay? So bear with us and everything. This will bring the district in alliance with all of the other school boards in the state of Missouri. Five seats will open. We have some unique twists in the school board election. A normal school board term is 4 years, but due to the redistricting after the 2020 census, some terms will be 2 years and other terms will be 4 years. Sub-District 1 terms will be for 2 years. Sub-District 4 terms will be for 4 years. Sub-District 5 terms will be for 2 years. There are 2 at-large seats, but only 1 candidate filled for each seat. Patty Mansour, I think that's her last name.
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay, and Jennifer Wolf will be seated without options.
So what I think is really good about that is, you know, we have a lot of really great business people, members of the community, even moms and dads with families that really can't commit 4 years of time, who would be excellent on our school board, but may be willing to run for a 2-year term. I think that's pretty good.
That's right. In Sub-District 5, only 2 people are running to represent the sub-district. Sub-District 4, no candidates gathered enough signatures for the ballot. There will be 4 candidates that via, what is it?
The write-in.
Campaign to represent the sub-district. The last time that the district had a write-in election was 2012, and the winner had 104 votes. School district elections are traditionally low turnout, with only about 10% of registered voters turning out to cast a vote.
I find that very interesting because, as you know from the news and Facebook and other social media, people have a lot of things to say about the Kansas City Public Schools Board. I would think that you'd have a higher turnout. I just have to say, if you've got an opinion, you need to go vote and put your name on it.
Well, what you said is the most important thing for voters, parents, or anybody that's involved. If you have an opinion, don't keep it to yourself. Don't keep it bottled up. You got to get it out because opinions make changes.
So if you have an opinion or want to ask us a question, then we'll try to wing it. We're at 816-931-5534.
Okay. School board elections are vital to the community as they are non-partition elections and give parents an opportunity to impact the community and education for the children who reside in their community. That just goes to what I was just saying. Your opinions, what you think will help, you have to let those out and everything and let people know and everything because I don't care who's high on the status up there and everything. An opinion can come from a mother that just at a homebody mother, something like that. She can say something that would change alter everything. So you have to get up and be opinionated about these things that's happened to our schools and our children.
I think that if you look at the history of the Kansas City School Board, we've got a really good one going now, and we need people to keep voting and bring in other folks that will continue what's happening. A lot of good changes. Our accreditation, which has that come through from the state yet? Mm-hmm. Have they said? Mm-hmm. Well, we've earned it. The school board has earned it, and whether the state recognizes that or not, that's due to a lot of cooperation, a lot of good work of the school board and the administration of the district itself, mm-hmm. Dr. Bedell.
That's true. We got to really get involved and wrap our brains around this and everything. To me, the children are the most important part in everything. Getting the right people in here and everything, and I'm not going to say that I know, I'm knowledgeable of all the people that's in this and everything, but what I've been listening to and everything, we need people that's going to focus constantly on building this ballot and bringing it up right so people come in and vote on these different issues and everything. And again, we go back to the parents and the teachers and everything to get involved in this so we can understand exactly where they're coming from so we'll know.
Right. And another aspect of everything that I mentioned, I failed to mention the teachers and the teachers union. This is not to say that there's no difference of opinion, but in the past we've had boards that have been so contentious with the teacher union and with how the schools should be run that we've come nearly to having strikes in the past, which is not a good thing, people. And the very fact that there has been so much cooperation, and if not cooperation, at least civility and coming to a compromise, mm-hmm. that has been for the good of the children, not for the good of the egos of people in both organizations.
So true. My thing is, I wonder sometimes if the teachers got a pay raise and really something that they can deal with, live with and everything. Because I think if they got a pay raise, they was getting paid more money, their training with the students and everything would enhance because it's an incentive for them to try harder. These children are our future and everything, so we have to be role models for them and put it out there and let them know the avenues and the doors is going to be open them in the future. And in doing that, what we're talking about right now has to come to play. It has to. Without a doubt.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think any time that you're not paying a competitive wage in the education market, mm-hmm. you're affecting your gene pool of your teachers and the future of your children.
I mean, it's very, like I say, it's very important. I mean, have you ever been on a job where, okay, you was making $9 an hour and everything, all of a sudden you get away from that and you go to another job and you're making $10, $11 an hour? Your confidence in yourself is built up, and you feel better about what you're doing and helping people and everything. So I think it's important that they need to, you guys know a little bit more about what's going out there and everything, and I do. But I agree and understand that this is an issue that's important, been for a long, long time in the community, in our school districts and everything. Our children and what's going on is very important, and we need people that we can trust. We don't need nobody that's going to go somewhere else out of town and everything and seek other jobs and so on and everything and then come back here and then come back here and everything. It's just not good. It's not a good thing. I don't think it is and has been for as long as I can remember. Even when I was a kid, I was living here as a kid and everything. Things were bad then. They've gotten better, but they can be better than what they are now. And it's up to us to make it a point to voice our opinions, to vote, get out and vote, and sign those ballots and everything, and get this thing going, because it needs to be done.
What is your opinion of the K through 2 preschool vote that they're, the money that they want to spend in the city?
My opinion on that, well, it's anything that's involved in this, the school board district and everything, the K, what's that, pre-K taxes and everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the ballot for the 3/8 of a cent and everything. I mean, that it don't sound like that's a lot, but it is. You know.
I agree, because it's not going to public schools. It's not money going to public schools. Yeah. And I really stand with Reverend Rodney Williams of the NAACP, that this winds up taking money from the poorest people, mm-hmm, in the poorest districts, and it's not going into their schools.
No, it's not going into their schools.
And that's not to say that I don't think that pre-K education is important. I just think we need to figure out another way to fund it. And we certainly need to expand it, and it needs to be free universal in this city.
I'm curious, as I've been hearing this this week, last week, about the other schools that are going to be closing. Does this affect those schools? Would that affect them in any way at all?
Tell me about the schools that are closing.
I'm not sure which ones are, but there are two schools that they plan on.
You mean Hickman Mills?
Yeah, that's one of them. And right. They're going to be closing these schools and everything. And I think, especially out there and everything, we need those kind of schools and everything for our children and everything.
Well, I think that we've gotten over the sticker shock of the Dr. Covington years, mm-hmm, of where we just close schools and move kids and break promises and create chaos in, mm-hmm, our schools. So what I'm hoping is that with these board elections and these different issues, that people will seriously pay attention and come and vote to keep us moving forward in our own district here in Kansas City, Missouri. Please call with any questions at 831-5534. Oh, we have a caller. Hello, caller, are you there?
Yeah, this is Mike. You guys are sounding great. I'm looking at the Kansas City Public Schools website, kcpublicschools.org, and going over some of the board's priorities. And one thing, just to piggyback off what you were just saying at pre-K, the public school stance is to support state funding to allow public school districts to offer or expand pre-K educational programs. So that's what they're calling their focus. But I, also on the same page, I'm looking at in their list of our priorities, they say support laws and local ordinances pertaining to tax incentive and abatement programs to provide school districts greater determination over the use of duly authorized local revenue sources. And so this is referring to TIF. They say each year approximately $35 million in real property tax collections are diverted from Kansas City Public Schools and into economic development projects. So Kansas City Public Schools has seen over $450 million of facility and maintenance improvement needs that directly support education be deferred due to lack of funds. And a chunk of that funding is there, these are my own words now, but it's being, you know, diverted to quote-unquote economic development projects, which are nominally there to support, to lift up certain communities, and that's quite often that's how they're used.
That's my biggest objection to the pre-K tax plan that's in right now. It's not going to go into those areas that need it the most. It's a diversion of money. If people are paying taxes, higher taxes, it should be in the education field, it should be supporting our public schools, improving those schools that need to be brought up in equity, creating programs in schools that don't exist. I mean, a lot of our public schools right now do not have full-time librarians. I consider that a criminal act of education. And, I know that a lot of people would argue with me about the TIF, that the TIF is why we're the big, great city that we are now. And I don't mean that sarcastically. We are a great city. But we have allowed some priorities of where our money is going to affect our public education. And people aren't looking at the long road. The children in our schools are the future of our city, literally, just like that song.
Well, you're so right. You know, that's one of my favorite sayings since I've been on the air, is today's children are tomorrow's future. But we reflect on them, they will reflect on theirs. Goes on and on to each and every generation, and it's up to us to open those doors and point them in the right direction. Because if we don't, what we've been hearing in the news and everything, this is what's going to continue to happen.
You know, really, this is probably one of the only things Sly James has been in favor for that I oppose. He's been a great mayor. He's a wonderful leader. He is recognized internationally as one of the great mayors of our country. But this is not good, in my opinion.
Line two.
Oh, line two. I understand we have another caller. Hello?
Hi, hello?
Yes.
Hi, yeah, I just had a couple of questions. I was wanting to know what the schools in Kansas City are doing to educate particularly juniors and seniors in high schools on financial literacy and shopping for health insurance, and also preparing them to choose the right fields to go into when they get into college. So, speaking about financial literacy first, two-thirds of Americans can't pass a basic financial literacy test. And considering that a lot of these juniors and seniors in high school are going to be entering college soon, they're going to be taking out enormous loans, before they've even had any sort of standardized financial education. I mean, essentially, am I still on? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, we can.
Yeah, so, I mean, essentially the Department of Education is giving 18-year-olds $50,000 credit limits to take out loans for college before they've had any sort of experience using a credit card, before they've had any sort of experience paying down a mortgage or a car loan. And I just feel like a lot of these students are completely unprepared for the financial reality that they're going to once they enter the real world and kind of leave their parents' home and stuff like that. So I was wondering, is there anything that the schools in KC are doing to educate juniors and seniors on financial literacy and to prepare them for those kinds of financial realities once they, get out in the workforce and once they enter college?
Well, I just want to say that I'm sorry I do not have the district curriculum in front of me to answer that. But, you know, I do know that some schools in the area, and it might include Kansas City Public Schools, I truly do not know. I know that some schools in the area offer something now that used to be what we all called home ec in the old days, where they kind of teach you how to run your house or how to be an individual. And in those classes now, they look and have an entire section that's about living on a budget and understanding what your expenses are. And one of the things they look at is how people get funding for college, applying for grants and scholarships, and having a more realistic picture. But I will tell you that these kinds of things are not going to come into inner city schools until, or at least all of them, until there is equity. And people see that as a big drain from other school districts, but it's not. When you have equity across your city, you have a stronger city. You have people who understand taking on debt and what that means. I myself, as an adult, took on debt when I changed careers in my 40s. That was a decision that I made. My monthly school loan payment at way past 40 now, I looked at that as the key to my happiness of my life. And you have to make those kinds of decisions. You have to be aware of how that affects your future. And that's really all I have on this is anecdotal.
I wonder myself, and if we're talking about the education and the future of our children and everything, and I wonder, I see a lot of parents are homeschooling their children. And they seem to be doing pretty good. The kids are there. The children are getting the degrees and diplomas. They move on to a good job and a better lifestyle and everything. If half the population in Kansas City start homeschooling their children, how would that affect the school board?
I really don't know, but I must tell you that in analysis and in some research, mm-hmm. it is found that really. Some homeschooling is not ideal. Mm-hmm. There are children that are not, who need that socialization of school. Mm-hmm. They need the structure of the school setting. Mm-hmm. So I don't look at that as even a viable thing. Mm-hmm. As a former public, I'll admit, I have my own bias as a former public school teacher. Right. I think that, people unintentionally have their own narrow field of their own personal beliefs and what children should know about in the world. And I think that they have a wider spectrum and learn more about other people and cultures and lives around them that are different than their own when they're in the public school setting. And I see that as a big plus.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that.
And I'm not against, please don't think that I'm totally against homeschooling. I know people who are homeschooled, who went to colleges mm-hmm. and excelled. And we've all seen those stories on the news. The homeschool kid, they got into like 20, 30 colleges. Mm-hmm. And I applaud that. But I also know that that parent went beyond uh-huh. the basic.
Yeah. A lot of them, the parents went beyond the basics. A lot of times that affect their work schedule, how they work and everything, because that child has to work with them, a couple hours a day and stuff like that and everything for them to get the real, mm-hmm. the full effect of that homeschooling and everything. But like you say, 50-50, half of them work and half of them don't.
And the child that is in the setting that doesn't work mm-hmm. has a narrower vision and a narrow choice of what's going to happen in their own future.
Unless some of them are strong enough to say, look, like you said, the whole school environment, being around mm-hmm. other kids and learning and stuff like that, that does play a big part in everything other than just being at home with mom or dad all the time and everything. That does play a big part, I believe, in everything. But,
well, and I don't want to... take away from those people, like I know, for instance, that Rockhurst offers its science lab at certain amounts of throughout a school year for mm-hmm. homeschoolers.
Right.
But you know, to me, that smacks a little bit of the elite because most people can't be at home teaching their children.
That's right.
Their economic situation is that they need to be in the schools, and that's why I am adamantly against money that takes away from public education and public schools.
That's true. I mean, I agree 100%. I mean, you shouldn't. That's something that's vital to not only to community, but the future of our mm-hmm. children. And like you said, when you take money from that future and everything, that's not a good deal. So we got another caller on the line. Okay, caller, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, would you tell us your name and what part of the city you're from?
My name is Matthew Oates.
Okay.
Candidate for Subdistrict 1.
Oh, you are our guest. Thank you.
Okay, all right. You got us there for a second. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Countdown Conversation. I'm your host today, Larry Jones. Today, guest is Matthew Oates, treasurer of the Kansas City Public Board. Good morning once again, Matthew. Welcome to Countdown. And there is another candidate on the ballot for sub-district one. She does not return, she did not return our request to be a guest. What do you think about that?
Oh, I'm sure she's a very busy woman and maybe she just wasn't able to get around to that.
Okay.
We need a break.
Okay, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Matthew, can you tell our listeners a little about yourself?
Okay. My name is Matthew Oates. As you mentioned, I am the current KCPS board director for the Waldo Brookside neighborhood, and I currently serve as the board treasurer. I'm running for re-election in 2019 in the newly created Subdistrict 1, which is created after the redistricting effort. And so that area will be Waldo Brookside, Plaza, Westport, Midtown area, so pretty much kind of the southwest corridor of the city. I'm a graduate of Kansas City Public Schools. I graduated from Purcell Academy in 2003, went on to the University of Missouri Columbia to get my bachelor's in electrical engineering, and that's my profession today. Before I was on the school board, I served on Friends of Hell Cook and worked with the group to reopen Hell Cook Elementary School that's in the Waldo neighborhood. This year actually is its first complete year as a K through 6, so they'll be graduating their first sixth graders this year. Since being on the board, I ran on a platform of engagement and achievement. One thing that I learned through the Friends of Hell Cook process was how important it is to engage communities about their schools and to let them know what their options are and that there are great schools in the district right now for them to be able to use, advocate for, and send their children. So through that, I was able to hire Dr. Mark Bedell. He did a facility master plan. I caught kind of the end of the conversation you were just having, but the facility master plan that prioritized classroom instruction and education over operations and buildings. And so we were able to repurpose a lot of the budget to have expanding instruction and educational opportunities. You look at our high school, we have much larger participation right now in extracurriculars after school. This year we've instituted AP at every grade level in every school, which is advanced placement, starting with ninth grade now. And so we've been able to increase the rigor by looking at our budget that way. And then finally, we had a community-driven strategic plan. In the past, it's been every superintendent comes in, and they have their plan, and maybe they were only here for a couple of years, and then they left, and then it was time for a whole new plan. Well, what the board and the administration wanted to ensure was that we created a five-year plan that was the community's plan. And so it was able to outlast any potential changes at the school board level or at the superintendent level. And so that level of, you know, intentionality and transparency around governance has actually led this district to achieve the highest accreditation score it's had in its history. So I often like to tell people there's never been a better time to be a part of Kansas City Public Schools. I hope to have better times in the future as well for Kansas City Public Schools, and that's why I'm running for re-election.
Okay, Ms. Dose, we're going to have to stop for a minute for a break, but I want to come back so you can finish. I think Kansas City is interested in what you have to say. Okay? So hold on. We'll be right back.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Kansas City, and welcome back to Countdown Conversation. We're talking with Matthew Oates, treasurer of the Kansas City Public School. We got, you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. I'll ask you a question. What sub-district are you running for?
So I'm running for Subdistrict 1. It's the newly created Subdistrict 1.
Okay. What are the boundaries for your district?
So to the south, it's 85th Street. To the north, it's 31st Street. On the western boundary is State Line. And then on the eastern boundary, it pretty much jogs between Main and Oak down the eastern boundary.
Okay. How long is the term that you're running for?
So this will be a 2-year term for this first. If you recall, the school board is reducing from 9 members down to 7. And so in order to get our staggered terms as the board has had in the past, seats 1, 3, subdistricts 1, 3, and 5, and at-large seat is going to be a 2-year term this first time, and then the remaining will be 4 years, and then in 2021, this seat will become a 4-year term from there on out.
Okay. Now, how long have you been doing this?
So I've been on the school board since November 2015. I was actually elected on the Royals Parade Day. And so that's I got to make the front page of the paper for the Royals Parade. So that was a fun time.
Okay, next question I want to ask you. You know, I deal with music on my show and everything, and a lot of the artists, I always ask them, what inspired them to do what they do? And I'm asking you the same question. What motivated you to get into the school district and make your opinion known that there are changes that need to be made?
Okay, well, I share your appreciation of the arts. As I mentioned, I graduated from Pacell Academy, so I was a performing arts student. What inspired me immediately was when I graduated high school and I went on to college, one thing that became abundantly clear to me as a kid of the 90s and 2000s of Kansas City Public Schools was that there were a lot of things and opportunities that I simply didn't receive while being a student at the district, and I was committed to coming back to Kansas City Public Schools and closing that feedback loop and being able to come back and ensure that our future students have those opportunities they need to be career and college ready to find whatever success in whatever post-secondary pursuit that they're looking for. And so that was my initial motivation. As I got involved at Friends of Hell Cook in the process of working to reopen a school and re-engaging people, one thing that you find is just the opinion of the school district kind of lags where it actually is, probably about 10 years or so. And so being able to go out there and, number one, demonstrate that urban education is possible. We don't need to immerse ourselves in gimmicks or become desperate and do things that can long-term harm this district and harm these students, but to just operate with good practices, be innovative, find ways to collaborate, all to ensure that when that kid walks across the stage with that KCPS diploma, that it secures them a promising future, regardless of whatever they're going to go into.
Well, you've kind of answered the question. This is Gwen. About what I was going to ask you, what your vision for education in our city is, and I think you kind of grabbed it there, but what do you see as the board's role and responsibilities in making that happen?
So the board is a governance body, school boards are, so I think the easiest way to put this for people is the board is about direction and protection, right? And so the board is to give the overall vision of the district. Our responsibility is to be able to look at where this district is, where do we want it to go, and then hire a superintendent who we believe can take us to that place. But it's also about protection, and protection looks like many different things. But ultimately, it's about being sure that the sustainability of what this district is and what we're trying to do can have can be long-term sustainable. And so, and also ensuring that you're not violating students' rights in order to make these, changes. You're not violating parents' rights or, your employees, that you're not risking the financial position of the district. All those things are important. And so I think, if I could sum up the school board's role as far as governance is concerned, it's direction and protection.
Okay, another question. This is Larry J. again. The current board members is 9 members, and the new board members will be 7. Will that make a big difference in how the board operates, or will it lessen it?
So whenever you have a smaller body of, a smaller body politic, I think that there can be positive and negative impacts. So obviously the positive impact is it might be easier to build consensus around moving forward on items. One thing that was important to us, so the original 7-seat board that the state had recommended would have been an at-large board where you would have ran for the whole school district. What's important to us, though, was to make sure that all communities could be represented on the school board. So we were able to get that change, and so that there were still sub-districts as part of this. I think one of the drawbacks is, just like it's easier to build consensus, with it having, with your 50% plus one number going from 5 to 4, that does concentrate more power with a single individual, and so that could present itself in the future as times that could potentially hold up votes or progress on things. So it'll ultimately have to play out. I think elections have consequences, so I think voters should be very well aware of who they're going to the ballot for, and hold me accountable, hold colleagues accountable to be sure that they are operating in the best interest of children.
So what are some priorities that you would like to accomplish if you are reelected?
I'll list off three. Number one, obviously, is improved academic outcomes. So I understand that the district has made, we have had the highest score that we've had in accreditation. But there's still, if you look at our scores, there's still much work to do. And for me, accreditation should become the new minimum standard for the stakeholders of this district. And I am looking for KCPS to compete with all the, and not just with just charters, but I want to compete with all the suburban school districts. I want Kansas City Public Schools to be seen as the district of choice in the Kansas City metro area. Number two, obviously, is maintaining the great relationship with Dr. Bedell. So that's extending this contract and maintaining that good relationship. As we've been able to see, a lot of this work that we've been able to do is because there's a trust between both sides that they're working in the best interest of children. There's a relationship there, and so that collaborative relationship has allowed this district to be able to be nimble, to make new investments, to find new ways and new strategies, and has borne the fruit that we've seen thus far. And then finally, as I touched on before, I really want to look at the outcomes. And so right now, Kansas City Public Schools, along with every school district in the state of Missouri, requires 24 credits to graduate. We have students, though, for 28 credits total, so that's 7 credits a year, 4 years of high school. And I want to see how we use those extra 4 credit hours that we have with them to secure that career ready, whether it's real world internship experience, whether it's rigorous college prep curriculum, however we're using those extra 4 credits, to be sure that our students are ready as soon as they walk across that stage to pursue whatever their passions are.
Okay, question again. Being a school board member, do school board members oversee all of the employees of the district and to confirm that they're doing their part as elected?
So school boards only employ one, only have one employee, and that's the superintendent. It's ultimately incumbent upon the superintendent to hire his staff, his or her staff, and to, develop the means to accomplish the ends that the district has had, or that the board has set forth for him or her. Now, there are rules in place that the superintendent cannot allow the district to become compromised by poor performing teachers or unethical, central office staff or anything like that. And so if the district becomes aware of that, we will hold the superintendent accountable as far as how we go forward with remedying that problem. But no, I cannot, I do not have decision-making power on hiring or firing just any downstream employees.
Okay, I'm happy to hear that, because I think anyone who's been in this city since 1980 knows that that was not necessarily true of the past.
Yeah, and I think it's important, And, you know, when you think about maybe where we've been and where we are now, that the fact that we try to keep that wall, this board has really embraced governance as a way to forward this district. And you're right, when the board starts acting like we are 9 superintendents instead of a school board is when this district can get into trouble.
So how does the board know if the policy that you've set are being accomplished and carried out by the superintendent?
Wonderful question. So governance feels really unnatural when you're first part of it. And so I actually had some very good mentors who were on the board when I first was elected, who kind of walked me through the process and taught me how to use policy to advance the goals that I saw. So I've actually led a lot of our governance efforts and our monitoring. So what we do is we take that policy, we work with the superintendent to create an interpretation of that policy. So let's just use our first policy, 1.1. Every kid needs to be proficient in advance, and if they're not proficient in advance, they need to show significant growth. Well, we have to define, the superintendent, who's an education expert, has to tell us, okay, this is what we're going to define as significant growth. So the district right now says significant growth is a year and a half. So regular growth is 1 year. Significant growth is 1 year and a half. So we then determine what are our key performance indicators. Like, what stats are we looking at to tell us whether or not that we're on pace? And so what we do now is at the beginning of the year, we have a presentation about where we are, where our goals are, and then what do we see as the causes of why we're not at our goal and how we're going to mitigate those or address them. And then in the middle of the year, we'll have a review over how effective those interventions have been. And then at the end of the year, we evaluate the superintendent on that. And so it's a very public process. If you show up to the our board meetings on the second or fourth Wednesday of the month, so the second Wednesday of each month is when we have these monitoring reports. And I would always encourage the community to come out and listen and see the efficacy of what this board and superintendent is doing.
You know, I'm pretty sure the listeners would want to know, what is your opinion of question one on April the 2nd ballot?
Okay, so obviously, as being a board member of Kansas City Public Schools, we released a statement with some concerns around the regressive nature of the tax, the governance structure of this, and also the constitutionality of it. As an individual, I have some additional concerns around this plan's ability to deliver equitable access to pre-K education. And so I'll say, yes, I understand that the plan says that, you know, eliminating deserts are part of this, but the city over the last decade has not shown, I guess, a true fidelity to that as an ideal. And so I'll use TIF as an example, because this tax is built like TIF. So TIF says that it's a tool to remediate blight in the city. Now, if I gave you a map of blighted communities 10 years ago, and I gave you a map of blighted communities today, do you think that we would have seen, do you think there will be much difference in the remediation of that? No. Where you see the investments are communities that are already, you know, very rich and very well staffed and supported. I fear with this plan that there is continuously a lack of political will in this city to actually, at the city level, to actually drive investment, like to push investment in that area, to tell a entity that if you want this public incentives, if you want this public subsidizing, that you need to go where you're needed. And so my big concern is going to be that long term is that we're going to come back in 10 years and there's not going, we will not have remediated those pre-K deserts that we know of today. And that's going to be even more important because pre-K doesn't provide transportation. And so you definitely need quality pre-K that's local and accessible to the communities that need it most. Not just saying, you know, go out to 125th and State Line. If you live on 31st and, you know, 31st and Park, go out there and maybe you can get in. Like, that's not good enough, in my opinion.
No, I totally agree. I think that people who are really for this are not looking at the reality of what's happened with TIF. One of the other promises that TIF had was that it was going to create, and create more housing and create a situation of more of a livable income of rents that were affordable housing, I guess is what I mean to say. And that's not there. And you have only to, and that's not just my little spout. That is our reality. I also feel that people who have cars and have easy access to many things have no concept of what it means to not have a car in this city and to rely on public transportation. And people lose their jobs over these things. It's not
absolutely
good. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so you're right. And so if we're not making accessible quality in these pre-K deserts, then once again we're pushing that burden on these families who are less likely to have dependable transportation or who are less likely to have flexible jobs like maybe I have or some others, in my community. And so if they can't, maybe they can't be 10 minutes late to work because they had to take their kid all the way across town to come all the way back the other way. So we have to be really, really intentional about this in a way that I have not seen this city do thus far. And I'm talking about city government do this far. And so it doesn't inspire confidence in me on this moving forward.
I'm with you entirely on that. I agree that it's a beautiful plan if it's like rose-colored glasses. That's what I call it. It's a great idea, but it doesn't go to the core of the inequity in our city, and it doesn't address it. Yeah.
As we close out, could you give our listeners a closing statement, something that would benefit them?
Okay. I will close with I believe in urgency, focus, and ultimately outcome. And so to give you an idea about how quickly things can change. So 10 years ago this month, this school district executed the right sizing plan, where it shut down 35 of its 70 schools at the time due to low enrollment, poor performance. 5 years ago, right at this time, the district is fighting off state takeover and just now regaining provisional accreditation. I was elected in November 2015. Since then, we've hired a high-quality superintendent who has not only performed but also wants to stay here for at least 6 years, and hopefully we can get them for even longer than that. We have achieved the highest accreditation scores that this district has seen. And we're on the brink of getting full accreditation. And we have a school board that governs responsibility, that works hard toward solutions, that it keeps positive news about the district. It doesn't embarrass the taxpayers of this community. And so if you were to look and ask what you wanted of the district at that time, I believe we would have checked everything off. But the important thing is this was all made because you elected not only smart people, not only people who are good-natured and ethical, but also you elected people where this was personal to them, that the success of this district truly mattered to them. And so those three things are very incredible and have led to the outcomes that we want to today. We're urgent, which I always try to remind people, urgency is not the same as desperation. And so this district has, we're focused. We have a plan of where we want to go, but we're not, desperately risking your child's future hoping something might stick. We research everything. We engage our stakeholders. We get their feedback, and we make a plan that works best for them. And then finally, on the outcomes, as I mentioned before, having a superintendent who's invested in this community, who enrolls his children in these schools, the APR performance and the future ambitions of the school board and the superintendent for this district, I think it's a no-brainer that you should support this current board and be seated again and to finish out the work that we've already started.
Thank you so much for that statement. We would like to thank Matthew Oates for being our guest today. We never end Cowtown Conversations without a community minute. And here it is. The 3rd and 4th District will have a City Council candidate forum on Saturday, March 16th at Northeast Library, 6000 Wilson Road. The forum will start at 10 and end at noon at the center that's located at 3700 Blue Parkway from 6 to 8:30 p.m. The Northland neighborhood will host a City Council candidate meeting and meet and greet on March 21st at the NNI Nervous offices located at 4420 Northeast Shoto, Suite 100 from 5 to 7 p.m. And for Cowtown Conversations, this has been your host, Larry J., and his inept co-host, Gwen Irvin. You have a great day, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.